Art Slice is a different dive into art history. We goof around, we curse, you learn from it, but don't expect a typical lecture. You're welcome. Your eyes open. The glow of a floating kerosene lamp illuminates dark swirling clouds above a gravelly charcoal mist, giving shape to two oddly wobbled farm structures. You are all alone, maybe 12 or 20 feet back from what is now clearly a disaster, a train wreck of a scene, but calculated, meticulously dismantled by some seasoned psychotic engineer. Both structures are limply deflating and somehow rigidly erect against the cloud-covered night sky. The kerosene lamp you first noticed floats, you think. Is that a disembodied arm reaching for it, supporting it, barely visible under its cast shadow? Then you notice other oddities? Those structures, a henhouse, a stable? Effortlessly sawed 3/4 of the way through, like slicing through freshly baked bread. Inside, hens find warmth by nestling together above a blanket of hay, which below covers a cold, motionless human body, legs and feet exposed, stiff, tendons frozen and contorted. A fish is pinned to the earth with a melted candlestick-like dagger, arranged to point towards the legs. Next to it, a whimsical pathway resembling a massive pie crust, leading your eye to the stable. Now I've noticed you've written white horse here, but it's definitely a dog.
I think I'd know a horse from a dog, Stephanie.
That's a horse.
Yeah.
That's a dog.
That's a horse.
Perro.
That's a horse.
Ese es perro.
Caballito.
Perro.
Caballito.
Perro.
Like the Deftones album. White pony.
A white dog.
Yeah.
Tries to rest. The other realizations come in waves. Rickety homemade ladder and barrels that seem like they could support a great weight or easily collapse at the first pressure point. Footprints. Both animal and human lead everywhere and nowhere. Gingerbread children, arm in arm, have freed themselves from their dough. The leftovers lead you back to a hen strangled and floating, breast up in the drinking trough. A pair of flamboyant cowboy boots rest alongside bowling pins arranged as a perimeter, scissors planted in the earth, a discarded eye mask, a basket of gathered eggs, everything seemingly out of place, but carefully positioned to lead you to every clue and every red herring. The white, fluffy dog turns its back to you. The hens are wide-eyed, but avert your gaze. They know what happened. Did the mastermind of this crime vanish without a trace? Did you yourself awake from a fugue? Who done it, indeed? Diane, listeners, welcome back to Creature Double Feature. I'm Spookefany Duenas.
I'm Russell, the Crypt Maker, the creature from the Art Lagoon, the human painted fly, like Giotto.
Okay.
Giotto, remember painting that fly allegedly?
Yes. allegedly.
I'm that fly.
I mean, I remember
I'm that human
that.
Painted fly.
Alleged joke. Okay. The second work, the second dose of our creature double feature is a gruesome murder mystery work called Whodunit, named after the detective paperbacks that were popularized in the mid-1930s, dubbed Whodunits, just a few years before this 1944 lithograph was created by the artist, illustrator, and writer, that part is very important later, listeners, Wanda Gogg.
While aspects of Whodunits can be found even as far back as Edgar Allan Poe's Mystery of the Rue Morgue, the Whodunits of the mid-30s were much, much, much more formulaic and can be seen as a precursor to those bloodier, saucier giallos we mentioned in our purple episode. Whodunits now are pretty commonplace, especially in TV shows. Think Twin Peaks season 1 to a portion of season 2. R.I.P.
David Lynch. And this is Bob, and this is Dan.
¿Qué pasa, espante?
Where you, the reader slash viewer, act as a detective as severed bits and pieces and body parts are slowly revealed to both you and the protagonist, or sometimes just you, just little old you. And those clues can be honest to Betsy real-ass clues, MacGuffins, or red herrings, throwing you off the trail, making you wonder who TF done it.
Wanda's work, Who Done It, has like all of that and more.
Just like Wanda Gogg here, I like to think of our non-linear narratives, Demon Reindeer, out-of-season Christmas slash Halloween themes, released in, hopefully, let me check my watch, March? No, April, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, that we actually get it out by April. But all of that is kind of like a whodunit to AI scraping. That's what I like to think of our sort of gist as. I like to think AI would have a hard time making sense of our nonsense.
Speaking of nonlinear, Wanda was a bit of a whodunit to us as well. We had seen her work and noted it a long time ago, but it was kind of a red herring because whatever we saw didn't stick with us for some reason. Mm. So we were thrown off of her trail.
I'm like a fly.
The real Wanda trail.
Flies stick to things.
Hate to. Up until a few months ago,
a little late on that one,
when
sorry.
Listener Alan gave us... Up until a few months ago, when listener at Lynn Wolin gave us a clue in the form of, hey, go check out Wanda Gogg, okay? And check out Wanda Gogg we did, okay? We were blown away by how deep her work was. On first glance, it appeared to be simply mundane, lifeless subjects like radiators, kitchens, or garden tools. But actually, they revealed trippy, never straight lines, vibrating with energy, and Russell and I just looked at each other like, oh no, we might have a new Art Slice LLC patron saint because God damn, her work is incredible.
Goddamn amazing. Much like our other canonized artists, Charles Birchfield, Lenora Carrington, Remedios Varo, they saw kind of past the veil of the everyday and found the inherent extraordinary in the ordinary.
And like Harry Clark, the first dose of our creature double feature, you can check that out somewhere here. Here, I'm going to start doing the Macarena. Okay. These two have a lot in common, hence why they share a feature. They were both working artists, both kept food on the table by taking on illustrative commissions. They both grew up in cultures where legends and fairy tales were the norm, Celtic in Harry's case and Bohemian in Wanda's, lending their work a fantastic sense of possibility, fever dreamlike visions, and a full embrace of horror vacui.
Where Harry's spaces were filled with pattern and texture, Wanda's are saturated with equalizing energy, like the negative space is as present. Are you okay over there? The negative space is just as present and just as tangible as like the actual tangible objects she's depicting, which serve to like bend and warp her vision, kind of like a tumultuous rhythm, like the viscous drag, Stephanie, shaping the ocean waves. You know what I'm talking about? She's making the waves have shape. That's the negative things you don't see making the waves have shape.
Sexy physics.
Yeah, sexy physics.
Yeah, makes sense.
Sexual physics.
To paraphrase Wanda's words, the material world is more than a mechanical set of rules. Mm. Form and space is always in flux. Mm. And you can see a bit of that in Whodunit. At the end of her life, she was furiously finishing Whodunit and a few other lithos by hook or by crook in between those commission works, while suffering from long bouts of sickness made worse by the poverty she grew up in. Not to mention World War I and the Great Depression, Wanda still carved out a full life of whimsy, focus, and dedication to making. Mm. If you've made it this far, listeners, I might suggest watching this one with your ojitos, your peepers,
Face.
Because we're about to go on a wild journey in this episode. Yeah. Yes, winky face. No surprises. Two winky faces here.
Yeah.
Be sure to like and subscribe. Hit the bell.
Ding-a-ling.
I still don't know where it is. I should. But you'll find it for us. Thank you. And Russell, because of said journey, I think we should crack one of these. Okay. Yes. This is Magic Mind. And they sent us over a box to try out for a week.
Cheers. Oh. Stephanie, I've actually tried this before. Quick story time.
Okay.
Hopped off a plane at LAX. Dream of my cardigan. It was a work trip, so not my preferred way of traveling, not my cardigan. Okay. But I grabbed a couple of these bad boys because I clocked the color, the matcha color is kind of a giveaway. Mm-hmm. Love that color.
Yeah.
Notice it had rhodiola in it, something I take anyway every day to kind of sand down, smooth down my sharper neurodivergent edges. Mm-hmm. But this is like next level.
Yeah.
I don't think I like noticed at first, but I had this zen energy. This zen energy.
Yes.
Entire trip. And trying it out again this week, I was noticing like I was clicking into writing art slice so much easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same for me. Yeah. Actually, in the studio, I'm way more focused on what I'm making and thinking less about what happened that day. Like at work, I had to speak to like a ton of people the other day. Not
your favorite thing to do.
And I'm not an extrovert. Okay, it's really stressful. But after a few hours into it, I was feeling good, actually. This has top quality matcha. It has a lion's mane mushroom, ashwagandha, and L-theanine.
I did what some people recommended, and I was taking it with my morning coffee. Just felt like my brain juices were, like, synchronizing. Like, there was like, a synchronized dance going on in there.
You could use ArtSlice20 as a discount code for 20 to 48% off, depending on what you select. Using that code helps us out, and hopefully it will help you out as well. Okay, WandaGog journey commence. Wanda Hazel Gog was born in 1893. The first bebe of immigrants from Bohemia, a region in western Czechoslovakia, formerly part of Austria, and also where Moldavite is from.
Yeah, be careful.
Yeah. In New Ulm, Minnesota, about a two-hour drive from the Twin Cities.
The land of opportunity, where the America of the Mall is from. America, the Mall of America.
You know where you can get them.
The Mall of America.
That's right.
We should go!
Where you could be a roller coaster engineer, Stephanie, or a minimum wage associate at some like gothy store like Hot Topic or Spencer's Gifts. Or those weird crystal stores that had like those vaguely Asian-esque, lenticular, moving waterfall framed posters.
I love those.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yeah, I love those.
They're a little bit calming.
New Ulm was a small town settled by other immigrants named after Ulm in Baden-Württemberg, Germany. It was the perfect place for the Gog children to grow up in old world customs and whimsical fairy tale like Wanander grow, they did. Firstborn Wanda was followed by Stella, the Snelda, Asta, Deli, Howard, Flavia.
Mm. Do you think Howard maybe felt left out of that whole like gaggle of Gogs, Bohemian, German fairy tale naming convention situation?
Possibly.
Okay. Right.
Possibly. Their father, Anton, who was an artist himself, made sure that his children, while not having much money, would have, you know, that Germanic fairy tale adjacent life. Papa Anton even built the children this gorgeous house, from scratch, okay, with 7 different types of windows, and he wasn't even, like, a big, burly, like, lumberjack sort of guy.
Okay.
He was a little guy.
Short kings can sling, Stephanie.
Yeah.
They can sling timber, low to the ground, they're well-balanced, they're like little tarp.
But look at this house. I mean, look at this house, though. Look at this house. They have tours, okay? They're friendly. I think we should go there one day.
We do need, yes. Yeah. Let's go.
Anyway.
I want to see it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I would like to see it.
So, Papa Anton...
I mean, it seems very formative. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I know we haven't gotten into her work yet, but it does seem very formative to her upbringing. This is something that I feel like we should see in person,
right,
in the physical body.
One day.
With her physical presence, with her spirits, right, our auras there.
So, her
our
Papa,
chakras
a well-respected
are
local artist
are lending
and commercial
like
photographer.
Energy. See, this is exactly what the Demon Reindeer was talking about. Bring our chakras to these places to see them physically in person. All those chakra energies in the house, seeing the house, feeling the whimsical house, mixing our dark chakra energy. There's a black chakra, right? There has to be. Anyway, all the colors mixing together of all the chakras, making this black orb of like demon reindeerness there, feeling the whimsy of the house.
So her papa, a well-respected
local artist. We should go.
Artist.
We should go. Let's go.
Yeah, we should go.
Let's go.
Oh.
Go.
Demon reindeer, what should I do?
Oh, I think it sounds rad. I think you should go.
Started having kids. Wanda was the oldest.
And
there's a picture of Wanda.
Oh, cute.
Oh, my goodness. Oh,
and this, I didn't even notice this till I was having a second grade group come through, and they said, oh my gosh, she's got a pipe in her hand. Said, you're right.
It does.
It is. It's a pipe. And he said, and Lizzie too, that we don't want to raise a family above the photography studio downtown. Mm. So they built this house on the edge of town. Very poor, 7 children. Anton didn't make a lot of money in the photography business. He didn't make hardly any money in his artwork, but he painted a lot of homes in New Ulm. The Cathedral Church, which is up here a couple of blocks, that's been restored.
Her papa, a well-known local artist and commercial photographer, Anton Gog, when he wasn't too busy procreating with her mother, Lizzie, designed and built a house from scratch to accommodate their growing familia in the Queen Anne style, no less, with large windows that filled the room with light, including skylights, which were perfect for art making. Going as far as to paint the house in crazy two-tone bohemian colors, decorating the inside with stenciled motifs, the dining room ceiling.
Painted angels in the ceiling with clouds. He made it look like the sky, and he had his children's faces up there as angels.
Wow.
And
oh yeah, we read that he painted cherubs up here, so I didn't realize it was his children too.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
that's the same thing at the cathedral.
Wow.
Oh really?
In the cathedral.
Okay. And wow.
When they went to the original, they found that Anton had painted these scroll works, and they went to make a pattern of it, and they found that it was freehand.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So it really shows that Anton put a lot of his own artistic talent into this house. And then I can never find this, but supposedly one of the kids scribbled their name there.
Oh, I see it. Asta?
Asta
Gog. Oh, wow. This is to say, creativity was encouraged. If they weren't running around outside in costumes that Mutter Lizzie made for them, they were making paper dolls or they were drawing as soon as they could hold a pencil.
These were all found under the boards.
Oh my.
Showing what the kids had played with and lost or stuck down there. Who knows?
I love paper dolls.
Yeah, the kids don't know what that is anymore.
Oh, that's sad. They would read Papa's German art magazines while he painted in his studio. Or they were plucking strings or playing keys of traditional songs from Bohemia in the parlor, together as a family.
Howard, I think he actually became a traveling banjo player, probably because, and I'm sure there's a hyper specific name for this in German, for like the feeling
of being left out of that gaggle gags, like Germanic fairy tale adjacent naming convention, right? Mm-hmm. Something, yeah. Something like probably like Banja Leftuteman. Banja Leftuteman. Leftuteman.
That sounds legit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, the Gog House was filled with love and creativity. So while they certainly were not rich, they were house rich.
Financially speaking, as you can imagine, steady income for an artist slash commercial photographer in a small Minnesotan town was extremely hard to live on. But they shared their wrinkled, unstarched clothes, bedbugs, and meals all the same. Even to the point of awkward glances from other townsfolks,
who despite also being from Middle Europe, felt that the Gogs were maybe a little too boho, even for their own bohemian roots.
Didn't have a garden, which of course everybody had a garden back then because they wanted the backyard to be a play area for the kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they were criticized by New Ulm as the very artsy, crazy Gog family. They did have the Beeble grandparents lived on the edge of New Ulm to the mm-hmm. south and mm-hmm. wanted to tell stories about walking down there and the good times she would have, and they would give food to the right. family because they had.
Wanda probably realized a lot sooner than her siblings that other families don't only speak German. Most of them have starched clothing, plenty of food, and they weren't allowed the almost anarchistic freedom that she was.
I'll show you some things that Wanda had sketched as she was growing up. She would take her sketches, note cards, peddle them to people around town to make some money. The story is that she would get a few pennies and she would buy more paper and more pencils. This shows that she did her brother Howard on a grocery sack.
Wow.
So anything she could get.
Despite seeing what a pursuit of the arts could lead to, or not lead to, Wanda was still magnetically drawn to the call of the artist life. I mean, but for real, like she was almost compulsively drawn to it, whether... whether it was Anton's influence or just the magical nature of her life and the house that he so lovingly built for her.
The house with like no electricity, plenty of natural light and lantern lit nights all there to just kind of feed her imagination. She would save up whatever she could for pencils and paper, writing in her diary the insanely adorable mantra, draw on, draw ever, draw on, like on.
Yeah.
Draw ever.
Forever.
Yeah.
Draw forever.
Draw on forever.
Yeah. Classic, iconic. So much so that Wanda earned the name Inky.
Wander?
Wander. Earned the nickname Inky, yeah, not
okay.
Icky.
Okay.
Because she was always stained with, you know, ink
just
from
rubbing it in
always,
her eyes.
She was just drawing.
Just dropping it in her eyes from that inkwell.
Drawing also.
Getting the whites of her eyes black to kind of fulfill that ink vision, to see the world through an inky perspective.
Okay, WandaVision.
Yeah,
WandaVision.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, seriously though, she was once ordered to stay in a dark room for a week because her eyes were so strained from always drawing.
No, inky, more like a blinky. Like, blink your eyes, girl. Like, blink them a little bit.
A little bit.
It's fine if you got slow. A little ink in there, just blink. Even at this age, her hands and eyes just couldn't keep up with the creativity that was just like buzzing around in her brain like a beehive, just like... So she like had this very artistically formative childhood, but another clue in the case study that is Wanda Gog were stories. She loved to soak up those old country Märchen fairy tales.
Yes, and these were not your sanitized rose-colored stories from Disney. Mm.
To get those happily ever afters, your Snow Whites, your Sleeping Beauties would have to endure witches, mayhem, goblins, dismemberments. You're going to wander into the Black Forest for a Mozartkugel. Someone's going to get cooked in one of those like Germanic, like Dutch oven pan situations. Probably by a Durlang man. He has the long reach to reach it into like the oven, the deep oven. The
deep oven.
Yeah,
okay,
maybe. Fair. But you know, it's going to make, when you survive all of that, it's going to make that sweet, sweet, sweet Bavarian so much creamier.
Cinderella, for example, her stepsisters didn't simply fit their big ass feet into those tiny slippers. Okay, under Mutter's prodding, they cut off their toes and heels to make their feet fit.
Well, you don't need to, you know, you don't need feet as a princess. People just kind of carry you around.
Ursula didn't simply take away Ariel's tongue. Mm. She actually cut it out among some other fucked up shit that we don't have time to talk about.
Stickle.
You know it? Okay, surprise.
Don't French kiss the girl. She doesn't have a tongue. She can't French kiss. She's gone.
No tiene lengua.
No, the crab on your shoulder. Don't French kiss Steve. You can kiss the girl, just don't French kiss. Don't try to French kiss the girl. Jamaican. I'm being the crab. I'm not racist. I'm not Jamaican. I know you might think I'm Jamaican. I'm not.
And you have a tongue.
Yeah.
So
right now,
none
I have
of this
a tongue.
Is real.
Yeah, we could all lose our tongues at some point.
The prince in Rapunzel gets his eye stuck in thorn bushes, and Wanda ate that shit.
Yeah, she lived it. She's danced with that unblinking devil. She's danced with that inky Wanda goggle vision. You know, the inky siren, right? The inky siren song she was drawn to magnetically, like ink that has metal in it.
Speaking of ink, in her diary, she wrote that these stories gave her, quote, a tingling, anything may happen feeling, the sensation of being about to bite into a big, juicy pear. There was something captivating about a great story.
So file that like formative clue / red herring moment away for later.
Because we have another one here, her time with her father. She would spend time with him in his artist studio here. She would also go with him on his art jobs, right? So his commissions for backdrops at churches, his portraiture work, where he would share with her his love of making, his self-critiques, letting her in on his art making process, like so she could see the ingredients, right? She could see like how the juice was squeezed, I guess. I don't know. His compositional struggles, his self-critiques, and overall his just obsession with art making. And really just like instilled in Wanda a love of making that she would keep for the rest of her life.
Those memories would sadly stay that, just memories, locked in a time and place for Wanda. In 1908, Papa Anton died suddenly from tuberculosis that he caught while taking a commission in an unheated church.
Should we get a green one?
Yes.
Or gray?
Green.
Gray?
I want gray, so you can have green.
The green or black?
I can't. It looks brown to me. In the parlor where they all once played music, Anton's last words to Wanda were, quote, "What Papa couldn't do, Wanda must finish." Oof. All while processing their final moments together, she could only nod, overwhelmed by the responsibility handed to her. Anton had helped raise their family as best as he could, filling their home with light and love. He had not achieved the level of success he had dreamt of, but he saw that same spark in Wanda and wanted to kindle it. She was only 15, sharp and talented, but only 15, and reality was sinking in. As the oldest child, she would need to help her mama take care of 6 younger siblings.
Including Howard, who, new theory, I think kind of just wandered into that, get the gaggle of gods at the High V buying some milk.
Okay.
And they're all singing a song. They're singing their milk buying song, the Germanic folktale milk buying song.
I bet there's
at the
one
grocery store at the High V, specifically for the High V.
Okay.
And he's like, this is a family, this Sound of Music ass family I want to be a part of. Because I myself am musically inclined, but my family does not appreciate my musical.
The other family.
Yeah,
the
my
OG family.
My OG family.
Right.
And is my name Howard? No, my name is Howard. He's like turning it on in the aisles. My name is
practicing.
I've been
on
here.
The way.
I've been here the whole time. My name is Howard. Your 7th child.
6th.
Whatever. But that's how he got there. That's how he got there. That's Howard he got there.
Lovely.
That's Howard he got there.
Soon came the unsolicited advice from fellow New Ulmers that the family should be split up and adopted out. They were also just sick of all the singing together, quite frankly.
Okay.
Or that Wanda should quit high school get a full-time job to help the gag goggle. Mm. I said that. To help the goggle.
You say the gogs.
Neither of which sat well with Wanda, and it didn't align with Papa's wishes. Mm. They would cobble together what they could, and Wanda wouldn't give up. Between finishing high school and helping with the household chores, Wanda would illustrate what she could in her own unique way. Postcards, bookmarks, and Valentines she made earned her more money than what she could ever expect to make at, like, I don't know, like a Culver's?
Yeah, or the, like...
Hy-Vee.
Yeah, exactly, Hy-Vee. Employee-owned. Employee-owned.
Soon, the story that... Oh, my God. Soon, a fully illustrated story by Wanda, Robbie Bobby in Mother Goose Land, published by the Minneapolis Journal Junior.
Oh.
At the bottom of the very first hill, something happened that Robbie Bobby did not wish for at all. A boy and a girl running at full speed tripped and fell, and their pail of water soaked Robbie Bobby to the skin.
Oh, Jack.
Said the girl.
Oh, Jill.
Said the boy.
Just see what you've done.
Said Robbie Bobby in a great rage. But.
Oh, Jack.
Was all the girl could say. And.
Oh, Jill.
Was all the boy could say.
Take me home. Take me home.
Shrieked Robbie Bobby.
I must have some clothes that are dry.
His own little sailor suit was hung over a chair. His stockings were laid out to dry, as well as his shoes, and when Jack saw him in one of his suits of Dutch trousers, he laughed, and Jill laughed, and laughed, and finally, Robbie Bobby just had to laugh too. While Robbie Bobby was still laughing so hard he could not stand, a little boy came in, weeping and weeping and ever so much weeping that Robbie Bobby stopped short right there in the middle of a laugh.
Oh, Tommy Tucker,
said Jill.
Don't be such a ninny. Just sing us a song and I'll get you the nicest supper you ever did have.
And Tommy squeaks out a tune with tears falling fast. Tommy was not half through the nice supper Jill had set before him when Robbie Bobby jumped up and said,
come on out with me. I have something to show you.
But just what it was, just wait until next week and see.
To be continued.
And seen. And it was through that recognition that a kindly patron decided to fund her art school education in the big cities, the Twin Cities.
Twin cities.
Twin cities.
Twin cities.
Wanda, though, wouldn't last long in either city or at either art school because there were twin art schools to match the twin cities.
Everything
right?
is identical mm-hmm. with some like very subtle but kind of uncanny differences that are kind of hard to put your finger on. Mm. Almost like a tulpa.
Okay.
Or a skinwalker who's dressed as you.
Reel it back.
But you kind of, it's like the mirror, but the mirror reflection.
No longer
it's like,
whimsical.
It's like a black mirror. That's kind of like a reflection of you, but a little bit different than
you're going
you
away from the whimsy and you're treading into this supernatural.
This is the spooky episode.
Okay, that's true.
It's a supernatural spooky episode.
But now I'm spooked.
Okay, well, that's the point.
That's my
good,
problem.
That I've done my job.
Good job.
Yeah. It's a reflection that you catch in your lapid-topid screen on a bright day.
Okay, well.
And your face is like a little warped and distorted, but it's you. But is it you? You know what I mean?
Okay.
That's the Twin Cities to me.
Being warped and distorted, let's talk about Wanda's work at the Twin Cities. Twin Cities Art Schools.
All right,
okay.
All right.
Already coming into her education with an advanced understanding of fundamentals thanks to her papa, and already used to working rigorously and entirely on her own timeline, because remember Blinky,
Inky, yeah. Stinky.
Right. Distorted and all the things.
Yeah.
She clashed with a traditionally trained faculty who labeled her as rebellious for not making work the same way as her peers.
And for putting ink in her eyes.
That too.
To get that ink vision.
So she would write in her diary, quote, I don't give two cents how other people work. Just because everyone else works one way is just the reason why I must work another. An imitation never gets far, and what is worse, no one who is an imitation can be himself.
Mm-hmm.
So Wanda, who loved the folksy small town whimsy of New Ulm and the countryside surrounding it, and who was just barely used to the relatively small Twin Cities, made the incredibly difficult decision to do what was best for her, to follow the path her father saw in her, leaving the Gaw clan
and Howard
to join the Art Student League in New York City.
New York City.
in New York City.
New York City.
New York City. Wanda, 5-foot-nothing, 90-something pounds, with a bob and sharp Petty Page bangs.
What?
Petty Page bangs.
Okay.
Petty Page bangs.
Not Petty Page bangs.
She had Petty Page.
No. Petty Page. Wow. Petty Page bangs.
Her bangs were petty.
Yeah, it's hard to say. No. Good. You get a pass.
Despite the bangs, she found herself as uncomfortable.
Despite those angular Petty Page bangs.
She found herself as uncomfortable with the hustle and bustle, the menacing skyscrapers, as she was mesmerized by all of the museum and galleries she could soak up. To make matters worse, like Dorothea Tanning, she didn't have a bank account in the positive monies to rely on.
Yes, it was in the negative monies, probably.
Negative. So she can
bank statements coming in. Alert on your phone.
Alert.
Yeah.
Yes.
You've overdrawn.
Scary. Well, that's actually nice that she's getting alerts.
Yeah.
Some of us
are going to go away now.
Anyway, it was in the negatives because she continued to send financial help back home.
Mm.
And she would do what she and her father had to do back in New Ulm. Commercial work. While steady work illustrating for packaging and literature would eventually come, at first she slept in a cot, after hours in a costume designer studio instead of renting her own apartment. She whipped up fashion illustrations, also like Dorothea, for luxury goods, stacking on other jobs whenever she could, like decorating lamps or lampshading, as Wanda described it.
And this was in addition to, attending the Art Student League with other artists we have covered or are still in the process of finishing the editing on, like Yasuo Kuniyoshi. It's a good episode. It's a good episode that we've worked really hard on. Mm-hmm. So just wait for it. It's coming. It's coming. Not only did she loathe those frivolous, capitalistic necessities for the, quote, big, cruel chunk it took out of my artistic development, unquote, unquote, end quote.
Unquote.
But she found herself just entirely drained from those demands. But like so many artists have had to do, she set aside that righteous rage of being unvalued in an economy that generates profit, not for you, and Robbie Bobby robs you of all those finite moments we humans truly value. And to fight back in between doing all the other shit she had to do to keep herself afloat, or job afloat, everything afloat, she made illustrations and wrote scathing articles for socialist magazines, like New Masses and The Nation, staying as clear-eyed as possible and fucking slogging away at what truly brought her joy.
On that note, she would eventually find a way to refill her cup.
At the Hy-Vee fountain. Sort of thing in the buffet.
What?
The buffet.
The buffet?
They have buffets.
Okay.
At Hy-Vee's.
Okay. At the age of 26, she decided, I don't really believe in this whole monogamy thing. I don't think it's right for me, earmuffs. Wanda, personally.
Earmuffs, young listeners.
But
earmuffs.
I have heard about sex.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it might be kind of nice.
Mm.
Well, at first it was extremely disappointing. She's like, I had to find a doctor willing to give me, an unmarried woman, birth control for that.
Yeah, it's like looking into our future and our past all at once.
Spooky. After some practice and opening up to multiple partners and even having a throuple sort of situationship, very radical.
Yeah, I mean, look at her here with her two lovers. It's not even really creepy.
No,
it's
sweet.
It's no creep vibes. It's buenos vibes.
Only buenas vibras. Yes, thank you. Buenas vibras. Okay. I just want to make sure everyone knows how to pronounce that.
Sure.
Buenas vibras. Okay.
Buenos vibras.
Buenas vibras. Yes. So Wanda began to think of lovemaking as integral to art making, describing the act as non-Euclidean.
Mm, interesting.
It is interesting. So
is that like bodies kind of like bending like origami, folding over, then going through like an MC Usher sex portals? Like folded over through the portals, in and out. Not in and out as in like the earmuffs. I said earmuffs. Coming back on top and around. Just, I'm thinking logistically, like I'm trying to figure out what a non-Euclidean sexual type situation would be. You gotta stretch for this?
I think you should
is
just
stretching
stretch
like
in general.
Implied, or is it just kind of like your body just kind of goes with it? Your hammies and tendies are all like loose and just kind of go with the non-linear flow of the MC Usher / origami / non-Euclidean sex portals. I'm just curious about the logistical sort of features of the non-Euclidean sex. That's all.
All great questions.
if you're from a different plane, you might not need to stretch.
I'm not saying I want to have non-Euclidean sex. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't put that on anybody.
Great to
kind of like present that to me as an option.
In 1921, Wanda found herself needing to recenter from the city that, quote, always makes a wreck of me. So she needed some good country living,
yeah,
right? Old-fashioned,
yeah,
of the wintry, Christmassy variety.
Okay.
Very specific.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And it was here where her petty beige bob, mm, bundled under warm caps and scarves, mm-hmm, where her eyes opened and the final piece fell into place.
You can kind of imagine her just like staring over frozen landscape, right?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the inner life of those frozen objects, you know, maybe even, yeah, kind of a non-Euclidean life, just, okay, humming, just electricity humming underneath the surface.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? The roots of their electricity, mm-hmm, just buzzing,
humming,
pulling,
yeah,
it through the icy dirt and through and into the hibernating flora, mm-hmm, you know, into this unseen kind of ether. And the negative space between the stillness of the rolling hills and cluster of trees just unveiling all of these forms that are pulsating, wiggly, warping lines and shapes.
A lot, and I mean a lot, happened and would happen to Wanda. Okay, the Great Depression would soon hit. She would soon face those bouts of mysterious illnesses. Her mother also would die extremely young, making Wanda an orphan before her mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have to return to New Ulm to try and sell the family home that her father had so lovingly handcrafted. But she would make the best of it, okay? She moved to the New Jersey countryside, starting gardens in the Garden State, and resuming caring for her youngest siblings who had followed her there, naming one of her homesteads Tumbling Timbers and her studio shack within the property New Creation.
Love that.
Yeah, so between gardening and making love, which she was now calling tree topping, love it.
Her family and lovers would pitch in so that the house chores would be taken care of, allowing her to lock herself away a new creation, opening herself up to those said new creations. Basically just like total creative flow states, right? Pouring her heart into her work, capturing her little buzzing ideas as they flickered and buzzed around her brain. I don't know. And painstakingly reworking her work until it was just right. When it wasn't commercial works, it was drawings, prints, and watercolors, all of seemingly mundane subject matter.
The always thrifty Wanda, as far back as the New Ulm days, would run into happy accidents. Trying to save money, she discovered that drawing on sandpaper created this amazing effect of pebbled electricity, almost impressionistic in the way that it added an aliveness to her still drawings. But even when she wasn't using sandpaper, aliveness was the key to all of her work. Her most well-known are those devoid of people, black and white, heavy cast shadows, cranked up contrast, those moments where you take a look at a room you think you know so well, and after you've turned off the lights, you see your surroundings in a whole new way.
And it didn't matter what she depicted, whether it was like just a lone tree or an empty interior or the tools of like a blacksmith, like every object projects this aura from her chakras, you know, all the chakras mixing together, turning black. They do this whole rubber animation, like warble thing, you know, from like the 20s, 30s. They're just basically like irregularities that are just precisely rendered. Like, for instance, the heat rising from a steam radiator makes cast iron sag. Inactive farm equipment rises up, towering over you like some folkloric dragon. Roofs, walls, floorboards, they kind of like breathe. Filling and deflating with inhales and exhales. An old rickety fence looks more like the weeds growing next to it than a fence. And that honors the life the material once held.
Some fucking alchemy right there.
Exactly. I'm looking at her drawing of a shelf with knickknacks and a kerosene lamp and some keys, right? I feel like I'm staring at a gosh darn Aurora Borealis.
It makes you anthropomorphize inanimate, ordinary objects like that shadow over there. It's definitely dancing. So, you know, you have to check that spinning wheel for a pulse.
Yeah. And when you hold an object, when you hold a tool, when you hold like an axe that's been grinded down perfectly, right?
Okay.
Maybe you cut down some trees in the Black Forest next to the Autobahn, right? It's something that holds a particular electricity, a kind of like organic electricity, for lack of a better term. And you know it. You've danced with it. You've cut down those Autobahnic trees before, right? You know what kind of electricity it yields. So when that object is still, you look at the charge it has, that potential it carries. So when you flip out those lights and you see the cast shadows, it feels like those shadows are projecting that dormant energy. I'm really glad we went to see the Gag's household, you know, because I can see that, I can like imagine the children back in Papa Anton's seven window home with no electricity, watching the shadows migrate across the floorboard from the flickering glow of that kerosene lamp. I mean, that had to play a role in those moments that she looked to depict in her work.
And maybe even sharing those Germanic folk stories with each other.
Yeah, around the kerosene lamp together, spooking each other out. I mean, this house, it kind of like acts as a liminal space between like reality and those fairy tales. And it's the magic I think Wanda captured in her drawings.
Often the cautionary message with those fairy tales was, nothing is ever what it seems. Boy, I sure do hope you are enjoying the episode you are listening to right now. I'm Stephanie Duenas from Art Slice, and Art Slice does not run on Russell and I's blood, burnouts, and occasional meltdowns alone. This fun, free, and educational content also runs on the wonderful partnerships of support from our listeners. We still need your support buying books, hosting fees, and going to locations, and your partnership will help cover that.
And heck, Steph, don't forget about those podcast tariffs we have to pay for now. Whatever the level, the $2 level, the $5 level, we appreciate and accept your donations at any level. Don't want a reoccurring membership? We have many t-shirts standing by. The Lost Trace Witches t-shirt, the Creature Double Feature t-shirt.
Callers, operators are standing by. Pause this episode now and call patreon.com/artslicepod or call artslicepod.com/shop for those wearables. And why not join our completely free, algorithm-free newsletter while you are there? Okay, back to the show. Wanda would end up exhibiting widely, receiving critical praise for her ecstatic prints and drawings, selling many, writing that it, quote, made me happy to think I had been able to get money for the things I really like to do. That doesn't happen often enough, end quote. That alone would never be enough to support her family members and lovers during the long stretch of World War I and the Great Depression. She would continue with seasons of almost manic creation of personal work between those commercial illustrations that kept food on the table. And while they offered a certain amount of artistic freedom, they were commission works. They were meant to serve a materialistic end. But luck would have it that in 1928, after writing and illustrating a short children's story, Bunny's Easter Egg.
Yeah, throwback to Robbie Bobby. Robbie Bobby and Mother Gooseland.
Basically.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. Yeah. Jack.
Oh, Jill.
Don't be such a ninny.
Oh, Jill.
Wait, who's the ninny? Robbie Bobby.
Someone's a ninny. We're all ninnies. Right. Everyone's a ninny here.
Embrace your
ninny. You listeners, you're ninnies.
We love it. It's a ninny club.
We all got soaked clothes.
No, we don't.
We're soaked from head to toe in our little Dutch outfits.
I love the Dutch outfit.
We're a bunch of soaked Dutch ass ninnies.
Okay. Wanda was offered a contract to write and illustrate her own standalone children's book. You doing okay there?
Yeah.
This commission, okay, is of a book, okay?
Yeah,
they're okay. Printed, okay? This is before digital illustration, okay? There were books. And what's a book, right? You said un libro es hundreds of papers with words or images stitched and bound together by glue, okay? And you're like, why the fuck are you saying this, Stephanie? Mm-hmm. Because I need to remind myself.
Some ninnies might need to know.
Some ninnies might need to know.
Ninnies need to know. NNN.
Look, you have to lift each page and flip it. You don't swipe.
Yeah.
No swiping. Swiping.
You gotta dry your wet Dutch ass hands off her. You're gonna soak them. This isn't some like water protected like iPad. They're gonna get all wet. The pages are getting all wet. And they're gonna stick together.
You could still drop it in the
toilet,
gonna
get
though.
A little crinkle to them because they're wet. Anyway, go on.
The publishing world was shifting to those distinct literary categories we now know so well. And with the economic dips being experienced,
public libraries were in higher demand, and new spaces were being dedicated to children's reading rooms along with kidly programming, okay? Because kids need fun.
Yeah.
They need to be entertained.
Yeah, I think at this point it was like mostly biblical sort of readings to children.
Yeah, children's like literature was not children's lit. It was not lit. Boring. Yeah, B for boring. Quite, you know. They were finally realizing that children were not just small adults read weird stories.
They're their own weird, like sticky-fingered, weird little species.
Yes.
Like still in those husk states. Yes. Remember the husk states? The little husks rolling around. Sure. They don't have legs. They don't have arms. Just rolling around. You have to pick them up, stand them up. They fall back over. They're just husks.
They're ninny husks.
They're corns. Ninnies.
Ninny husks.
Well, we're ninnies.
Okay.
Let's not conflate our allegories here.
Okay. My apologies.
Yeah. We're going to get all Song of Solomon here, and then we're just going to be confused.
Okay. All right.
It's all coming together.
Back to Wanda. So this all was the right time and place. The right time and right place.
I get it. Yeah.
Wanda puts her personal work on hold, and she takes a risk, okay? She accepts the contract, pulling from those Marchen fairy tales that she so loved as a child, right? The ones that made her feel as if she was about to bite into a big, juicy peach.
A pear.
Whatever, any fruit. Insert fruit here, okay? Her big debut was Millions of Cats, and she used two cats named Snoopy and Snooky as models, and Howard did the lettering. Yes, thank you.
Howard.
Thank you so much.
A bunch of Howard's work.
So she simplified her complex, fluid, almost psychedelic mark making only a little bit, which excited kids' intuitive eyes for imaginative visuals. Thank you. And the rhyme was catchy, okay, which is a vital element for a book that is going to be read out loud to niños, to children, okay, who have very short attention spans. And once again, they need to be entertained.
Yeah, we wouldn't know what that's like.
Wanda also pioneered the use of these sprawling two-page spreads, making the most of each page, which is also super important if you're going to read this to a child, because you need to open it
They
can look at it.
You know, it's like it's interactive before you could scroll through it.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't slide around, but you could. Yeah, yeah. You can. Your eyes can scroll.
Yes.
Yeah,
your
exactly.
eyes can scroll.
Your ojos can,
love it.
Can scroll ho. Go on.
We're creating new words here today and adopting new phrases. Okay. All right. So Millions of Cats is about the journey of an elderly man in search for a house cat that he and his elderly wife could care for.
Mm-hmm.
And instead his ass comes back with millions of cats.
One million cats.
One million cats. Million.
It's really easy to do because they carry that parasite.
That one toxic.
That makes you like them.
That parasite is, it's there. It's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
So millions of cats. It's cute and it's terrifying, okay, because it's implied that by hoarding millions of cats without the necessary resources to feed them all, those cute kitties are going to end up devouring each other.
Yeah, one little kitten does survive, probably Mr. Bigglesworth.
Yeah.
Does survive the kitty battle royale.
Okay.
And grows fat under the care of that elderly couple.
Yes. As animals do under the care of grandparents and such.
Yeah.
So as far as 1 million cats, one might say that that's a really unusual lesson from a fairy tale, right?
Mm-hmm.
That overzealousness can cause harm. Mm-hmm. But Wanda doesn't show the violence. It's implied.
Yeah.
Right. But it is a valuable lesson because it can be applied to so many things. Whatever the case, she thought that kids deserved a different kind of story told in a different kind of way.
She wanted to bring them out of those husk states.
She did.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, get them prepared for the real world.
Right.
Which, you know, maybe they could use their husks to kind of shield them for the real world. I don't know. It's confusing.
1 million Cats won a John Newbery Award in 1929, which apparently is super rare for a picture book. And to this day, it is the oldest American picture book still in print. American picture book.
Mm-hmm. God bless.
Okay. I'm just being specific because people like to, you know, they like to argue, but I check my facts. Okay.
It's like an eagle soaring over the mountains, flapping its book binding.
Yes. Yes. That is such a fairy tale animal. I love it. Anyway, so basically what we're saying, the book did very well. Okay. And right on time, because just the next year, the Great Depression reared its depressing head. Okay. Mm-hmm. Leaving millions of people, not cats.
Millions.
Well, I guess the cats. Leaving millions.
Millions.
Including artists out of work.
Mm-hmm. The personal artworks that Wanda loved to make would become super luxuries, yet the demand for low-cost books for libraries, both public and private, remained. So for Wanda, the children who loved the book and the royalties for millions of cats kept on rolling in like a chubby kitten looking for some tuna, you know, looking for their greenies, their treaty greenies.
Commissions also kept rolling in, okay, which is kind of bittersweet because, of course, she loved to bring joy to so many children, but unfortunately, it came at the price of her own work and health. Of the last three prints Wanda made in her far too short life, roughly 15 years after Millions of Cats was published, those that she was finishing by hook or by crook, whodunit was by far the darkest, but also the most mysterious and most intriguing because it offered a shift in a different direction. Commission versus personal work, both inventive and uniquely Wanda, were in the beginning still very different modes of working. But as her literary contributions mounted over the years, The Funny Thing, Snippy and Snappy, The ABC Bunny, Gone is Gone, Nothing at All, not to mention all of the Marchen works she illustrated and translated, Grimm's Fairy Tales and Snow White, the distinction between her work and her commission work was at times blurring. There's Fairy Tale from 1937, which is charming in this kind of like Teresa Duncan video game kind of way. And in her still lives and landscapes, those spaces normally devoid of any living, breathing thing, other than the objects that she depicted, which were living, breathing things in Wanda's world, were now at times filled with cats. A nod to the book that paid her bills and solidified her status as a well-known literary figure. Her second book, ABC Bunny, which is an alphabet book for children, was as interactive and imaginatively challenging as Millions of Cats. Also flexed her impressive printmaking skills, the ones she usually reserved for those museum-ready works.
If you were to squint your eyes and forget about the like cute bunnos, the lizards, the lizzos, and the adorably weirdo oddball signs, it had the same range of pitch black contrasts, murky midtones, and teeny tiny swirling marks that you would find in any of her gallery ready made prints and drawings. A is for amazing. This book is amazing. B is for the book, which is what it is. It is a book. Mm-hmm. And C is for let's cut back to whodunit. Whodunit, yeah, though, because we're talking about whodunit.
Okay. Whodunit was a bold step in a different direction for Wanda. It referenced in the title and Carnage depicted the literary world of those whodunit novels that were so popular, a genre that Wanda did not work in. It brought in Marchen in The Gingerbread Children, The Wicked Witch Boots, and The Old Country Barns. But it didn't pull its punches to meet the sensibilities of Americans like Disney's version of Snow White did, yes. This is like a culmination of her personal work and what she has learned from illustrating more straightforward tales for the chamacos, the children.
Chamacos, yeah.
Yes. Instead of bringing the art to children's lit, she is bringing lit to the art world, challenging it on so many levels.
Yeah.
And it's the perfect melding of all of the things that made Wanda, Wanda.
And D is for dag nabbit. It's time to go to the, it's eventually going to be, E is for eventually. Mm-hmm. It's going to be eventually time to go to the Art Size Museum. And I think finally that time is F for finally now. F is for finally now and for fun, because the Art Slice Museum is fun, okay? Which, of course, brings us back to the scene of the crime, the scene that we initially started this episode on, and we're back now in the less abandoned but still grimy. G is for grimy and gray. Still gray. Still grimy. A little grimy gray. Okay, a little grimy grays. Yeah. Because the Art Slice Museum Division of Color Theory and Color Studies laboratory walls are still kind of devoid of color from our negligence, right? I mean, we do consider kind of black, gray, and white colors. Some people don't, but I digress. Where we have an excellent edition of Whodunit pinned to the laboratory walls. Listeners, watchers, viewers, whatever. Stephanie, you can see it. We can both see it. It's right in front of us.
Yeah.
You're just going to have to trust us on this one. It's definitely here. It's definitely pinned to the walls. Don't worry. We didn't puncture pin.
No.
We pinned it well. And we have to decide quickly, hastily. H is for hastily. Does it belong in the Art Slice Museum?
It's no secret.
It is for I.
That we fell.
I is for in.
It, right.
It in.
Thank you.
In it.
Yes.
In it, governor.
It is. It is also no secret that we fell in love with Wanda's work when we were flipping through the catalog. This was the last work.
Right. And I felt immediately robbed.
Robbie Bobby robbed.
Robbie Bobby robbed of it, Stephanie, of what could have been just like a series of works like Whodunit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to ask yourself, like, what would she have done with just like 10 more years? Yeah. Her commercial works were starting to kind of wane at this time. Each book she made seemed a little less and less dialed into the magic that was Millions of Cats, that was the ABC Bunny, probably in part due to her health struggles. They were really starting to ramp up at this time. And while I personally think that being challenged with commissions and finding ways to exert your true self as an artist, exert your vision into a commission work is incredibly helpful for your work to grow. And like it leads to things like whodunit, right? I don't think she would have got to whodunit without taking on those commission works. You can't argue, though, that her commission work did rob her of her personal output late in life.
When she did find time, though, they were bangers.
For sure. Like Macy's Stairway is a later work with some of the most perfect shapes. Stephanie, listeners, I cannot stress this enough. Some of the most perfect shapes, the most perfect lines I ever did see.
It is heartbreaking, though, that this is the one she left us with.
For sure. For sure. And time is finite, you all. Like, don't put off any journey you want to embark on creatively. You never know what might come of that journey, mm-hmm. what kind of like weird, winding millions of cats kind of journey you're about to go on mm-hmm. with like Nestle Hills and cats following you and beautiful trees and scenic lakes.
I want to go there.
You don't know what kind of like beard you're going to grow like the guy in Millions of Cats. And while this work is able to stand on its own, mm-hmm. it's more impactful seeing her journey there. Mm-hmm. Like, as we were researching her, it just made me love this piece more and more.
And on that note, let's talk about exactly what we loved about whodunit. First off, that fisheye lens vision, that 0.5 zoom.
Yeah, it's like the inverse of those scrolling two-page spreads. It's kind of like this fisheye explosion instead of like those nestling, winding hill implosions that I was talking about earlier.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's the opposite.
Right.
Blows out instead of nestles in.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Opposite. Yeah. Gotcha. How about the only light source that comes from that disembodied hand that is reaching for / holding that kerosene lamp, which we actually read somewhere that that's her symbol for sex.
Okay. But the hand is disembodied. So interesting. Interesting.
I don't know. Wanda's interesting.
Yeah.
And maybe it has nothing to do with sex. Maybe it's just a symbol or like a form that she found fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like, it's also like turning on the light, which is what you would have to do back then when you wanted to read a whodunit late in the evening to give yourself whatever the horror equivalent of the tingling sensations of biting into a big juicy pear would be. Maybe
gotcha.
That's a Rambutan.
A Rambutan?
A Rambutan.
Well, maybe we didn't have the right books to back up that theory, but it was from a museum website, so I do hope it's true.
Yeah, and just beyond just the pure fairy tale sort of murder, madness, mystery, mayhem, massacre, the loneliness of witnessing this moment for yourself makes you feel as alone as any of her interior spaces and kind of just consumes all of your attention. The barn, the chicken coop, the horse stables here.
The doghouse.
Just horse stable. No, dogs do not have stables.
Dogs
do not have stables.
Ask the Richies. Ask the dog parents.
Dogs don't have stables. Anyway, they're just like on a visceral level, just like such satisfying shapes, mm-hmm. much like Macy's Stairway, mm-hmm. which gives those sort of Rambutan tingles that I was talking about. Yeah. The way that they kind of like fit together, especially with the swirling sky, mm-hmm. where those abandoned saws kind of carved out space mm-hmm. for the elements to do that viscous drag thing we're talking about.
Sexy physics.
Sexy physics, yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. But she's also cutting up things, right? The hands, the arm, the legs, and those scissors just like flung into the shadows.
All seemingly pointing back to those fairy tale suspects, right? Those murderous suspects of gingerbread children, bedazzled witch boots, right?
Like Shrek.
Oh, like in the lineup? Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure. Like, did a witch with, like, those fabulous boots.
Ooh, like the one in Leonore Carrington's house opposite?
Okay,
those
yeah.
Red boots.
I kind of forgot about that.
Red boots.
Did that witch, like, fall into the trough to try and save the deceased chicken? Is she, like, the good person? Is she a good witch? Is she...
Maybe she was trying to catch her dinner, you know? Or she was just allergic to water. She's a... That was kind of a bitchy thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
She's a witch.
It's a bitch that you're a witch.
Who likes chicken? Anyway, so... That dead chicken that's floating in the trough.
Wrapped in plastic.
Yeah, it's wrapped in those gingerbread remnants.
Wrapped in cookie dough. Doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. you tried.
Yeah. But
why is for you tried?
Once again, though, it's like negative space doing the violence.
Yes.
So the violence is being inflicted by the negative space and the fairy tale murder people.
Yes, yes. But also, it's about the gore that we don't see. It's covered up, right? Like, what's going on in those barns? Mm-hmm. You know, those hens and dogs, are they all accomplices?
Horses.
Or did they witness all of this with their eyes?
Yeah, I just want to say one more time, I don't think dogs have stables, Stephanie. I love you, but dogs, I think, have dog houses, not stables.
Okay.
Okay.
Ask the dog parents.
All right, we'll see.
Okay. Back to the saws.
Unless
okay.
one of those big dogs. Woof, woof.
They have stables.
Big dogs on the porch. Those, you know, those t-shirts? One of those dogs. If the dog comes a bar. The dogs are barking, don't There's big dog t-shirts, okay?
Okay. Big dog.
Anthropomorphic
energy.
Big dogs.
Okay.
Implying that you are the big dog wearing the t-shirt.
Wolf. I gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
Big dog. Wolf,
never seen that in my life. I'm going to trust that that is true. Viewers, listeners, let me know if you've ever heard of that or if Russell is just in his own little fairy tale.
Okay.
All right. So back to the saws. All right. So this seems like a freeze frame and it makes me wonder if she's getting temporal here, right? Is she fucking with time? Because we also have bowling pins, right? Skittles, and we have stabbed fishes. We have chopped logs. Is it nothing?
Yeah, is it just the violence that's inflicted on all living and non-living things in Wanda's world?
Right. And then we just have those swirling textures again, right? Those subtle marks, those millions of marks, yes, of the clouds and the grass. Yeah. And it's just, oh, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And the earth is moving, very Van Gogh.
Yeah, she was really, like Van Gogh, one of her favorites, right? And then she is really just living, especially in this one, but she does it in a lot of her works, but this one is just really living in those mid-tone grays. Mm-hmm. Like, when an overcast sky is the same color as the clouds above it, and everything is hazy and mysterious and ominous. Like more ominous than it would be if it was just like pitch blackout.
Right. Because we're sitting in a gray soup.
Yeah. The gray soup kind of destabilizes you. Like, Exactly.
Yeah. And it's a really bold choice for an artwork to tell some kind of story, right? That was mid-grays.
Yeah. And it plays with straightforward storytelling while also resisting that and just allowing itself to be art. Mm-hmm. And obviously, art is a language of sorts, right? It speaks very differently than a story. So it implies things, right? Like you don't see the fairy tale creatures encroaching on the real world, you know, starting with farm massacre before they take over, you know, everything. And that's my take. Like that would be my accusation were I playing like Whodunit Clue, which is a really great idea for a Clue board game. Mattel, who makes it?
Hasbro?
I don't know.
One of those monopolies.
Who makes board games? Get back to us. We'll talk. But to bring it full circle back to Twin Cities, Twin Peaks, Twin Davids, David Lynch's.
Kind of cloudy, some fog this morning.
The way that David Lynch, RIP, was able to tell a story, it was never the story you expected. Instead, it's kind of a sandbox for the brain.
Right, and Lynch would also reference stories and movies that he loved, like The Wizard of Oz.
For sure. Generally, though, Whodunit does have, like, a Twin Peaks vibras.
Definitely.
In its humor, its absurdity, kind of mixed with the horror. But I would also say Wanda here is also asking you to play in that sandbox to build up those sandy castles. And we're never going to know Whodunit, right?
Yeah.
It's not meant to be answered. It is a puzzle that you can just rearrange forever.
Right.
It's basically, again, Hasbro, get at us if you are, in fact, the board game makers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's Clue, but it's Clue for art.
Yeah.
It makes me think about maybe what was going through Wanda's mind, personal thoughts. This was not written anywhere. So many questions, so many possible scenarios. But in the end, like, we're saying there's nobody around. Maybe this was her state of mind. Like, she won't ever know the answer to her sickness. Just kind of have to accept it. It could be this. It could be that. But in the end, you're here for that moment.
Of all the work that she made at the end of her life, like, they were darker. Like, there was the abandoned quarry that she was making at the same time. There was the philodendron piece, which is, like, it's more hopeful because it's a beautiful plant that she loved. But also, it's kind of sad because it's just sitting there alone in the window.
All of these glowing things that we've said about this piece, how it's endlessly fascinating to look at, how it has the comfort of a well-worn fairy tale, how it has the mystery of a David Lynch movie, and the fact that this was her last work. She didn't even print it herself. They had to pull prints off of the stone posthumously. How it seems so uniquely Wanda means we have to have this in the Art Slice Museum.
Of course, I'm in complete agreement, obviously, but I also think that we should commission a TV series based around the events preceding this Whodunit moment, right?
Okay.
I want the swelling music. Uh-huh. I want Harry Goaz crying over the sight of the floating chicken corpse.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Joan Chen shutting down the farm, not the factory.
Not the factory, right? Not the sawmill. Moira Kelly. Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree the better Donna, right? Wailing at the hen school. I don't know. It's some sort of school on the farm. Okay. We will workshop it. I also like to think of them all as kind of like farmyard creatures. Like, what is Harry Goaz? Is he like a, he's kind of like a horse, right? I could see him as being an older
horse. He's a donkey.
With like a weird haircut.
No, he's a donkey. He's
sure,
a donkey.
For sure. You don't want to die of cold, toll free. Art that grabs me as an artist myself, Stephanie, and like you probably think this way as well, is this sort of like knowledge, this sort of inside baseball knowledge with the steps they went to get to those places, right? But you still find yourself in disbelief at where they ended up, like how they interpreted the same things I've seen, right? How they threaded that into like stunning works that take into account the things that we've overlooked or the dots that like you and I didn't connect. Mm-hmm. So I'm like really glad, first of all, listeners, that you recommended people like Wanda Gog and Harry Clark to us. And I'm really glad that we were able to go to the Wanda Gog house
and see it for ourselves with our own little ohos that I'm surprised didn't freeze. I've never been that cold in my life.
Middle of February, right? And Yes. Well, I think it's so important to exist in a place that an artist existed. Obviously, that is not always possible. So when it is possible, do it. And I think back to the first show that really knocked me out when I was just a young boyo. I just started painting, a young painter, boyman, boyo. The Charles Birchfield exhibition at the Hammer, hopped off a plane at LAX, Okay. Early 2010s. Probably owned a cardigan at that point. Might have. I don't know. It seems like something that's V-neck. Time appropriate, right? With yeah, definitely V-neck. Had a V-neck. Definitely a 2010s deep V. Okay. Not a great look for me, personally.
If you don't know about Charles Birchfield, please check it out here.
Yeah, and the curators of the show did such a good job because it wasn't just his work. It was his whole world, mm-hmm. right? It had his wallpaper, his sketches, his like weird symbols for sounds, for emotions.
It was immersive. Like,
yeah, it was completely immersive in that way. And I found myself there doing a bit of a whodunit myself at that show, trying to like connect all the dots and pieces. Like I've heard insects making ambient drone beats in the trees, like as you walk through the trees, kind of panning in your ears. I've also been alone in a house with most of the lights turned off. So seeing what Wanda and Birchie got from those experiences is so formative. It's so formative and just so important to artists, but also just to how you experience and digest life.
And it's uncanny how similar his and Wanda's works are, mm-hmm. which was all about how to observe your surroundings and turn off the notion of how things should look and instead expand to your other senses, right? Like, how do they feel? How does it sound? I mean, they were contemporary, so maybe they saw each other's works.
Yeah, but even if not, like, their ethos were very similar.
Yes, and now more than ever, all of the artists that we've mentioned, their work and message is so relevant. Throwback to Harry Clark, we are in a new period of industrialization.
Probably a recession and depression by the time this movie comes out.
Yeah, there's just been a huge seismic shift in our culture, mm-hmm. and many of us are burned out, and we want to return to the handmade and the real. We want to touch grass.
Yeah, tall grass, if you've grown it. Macanthus, if you've grown it.
And we want to believe in magic and fairy tales.
If you're a maker of any kind, it's really rough out there, and there are so many reasons like not to make work. You get false feedback from platforms that prioritize work that can be easily read on like a 5-inch screen. And it's harder than ever to find a reason, time, energy to make work, right? When everything feels like it's constantly changing and constantly changing for the worst. So remember moments of discovering artists like this because that is the potential power you have within you. Your work could impact somebody in the way that Wanda and Birchie and Harry Clark have changed our own perceptions of the world.
Yes, they have given our lives so much magic. Mm-hmm. Wanda lived through some really tough times and she resisted the Robbie Bobby robber because she said, fuck that. She said, life is full of whimsy if we choose to see it. Her life was a fairy tale that she made.
Important that she made. She made that fairy tale.
Right, right. There's magic, the house, her family, and the creativity they all had. There's also tragedy, right? The premature death of her parents, which orphaned them all. But in the end, it made them all grow closer. Thanks to Wanda's tenacity and big sister energy, stepping up as fairy mother to her youngsters. And she leaned on those fairy tales and her family to give her comfort during her final years. And she was pushing herself and discovering new ways of working in her final days, making the most of every moment. So what is the lesson in Wanda's whimsical fairy tale world? Perseverance, focus, and avoid smoking. Have lots and lots of non-Euclidean fun. Okay. Keep your lover and lovers close and pursuits and passions even closer.
So this is not the spooky ending I think we had originally imagined.
You know, sometimes it's not the message you expect, but it's the message you really need to hear. I mean, color me Jay. Jay for for just charmed.
Thanks, Demon Reindeer.
Well, I'll be on the couch.
Listeners or viewers, hopefully a bit of both, tell us what your favorite Wanda works are. Or tell us what your life-changing art moment was. We would love to know. Also, you might introduce someone to a new perspective.
You might give them like a peach tingle slash a haystack feeling, right? Yeah. This is not like a call to action per se. We just honestly want to know.
Yeah.
So yeah, let us know. But also, call to action, like and subscribe if you're watching and or please leave us a 5-star review if you're listening on your pod player of choice. That really helps us out. We are still kind of a small show, so that helps. Word of mouth helps. It all helps us get past those algorithm beasts, those bestial algorithm imps.
Let us overcome.
And their little like devil horns that, you know, look like devil horns.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Those. Yeah.
The music featured in this episode was Fire Walk With Me by Kenobit or Kenobit. Definitely added a lot of life to the show. It's really, I think it was made on a Game Boy Advance. Very cool. Loved it. Loved it. Loved a lot of his work. So check it out. Okay. Remember Magic Mind, offer code ArtSlice20 at checkout for 20 to 48% off. It helped our little brains get through this episode. We think it could help you out too.
We also have a Creature Feature t-shirt in the shop now. So if you'd like to support Art Slice, that's a good way to do it.
Brand new. Yeah. Illustrated by Stephanie and I. Mostly Stephanie.
Stop.
Yeah, it's a nice t-shirt. We're waiting on ours.
Or there's patreon.com/artslicepod. That is how we were able to swing that trip to New Ulm. Thank you, patrons and t-shirt buyers.
Yeah, and don't do it on the app anymore because it will charge you like an additional like couple of bucks. If you just go through like your browser, it'll be cheaper.
Old school.
Yeah, old school. Otherwise, just get a t-shirt. It's fine. That gives us like as much money as a patron typically gives in a year, like a $2 patron.
Yeah. A huge thank you to the folks at the Wanda Gog House. Special shout out to Marlene. Yeah. She was amazing.
Great tour guide. Thank you, Marlene. Thank you, Wanda Gog House. You can go there at any point. Sometimes you have to make a reservation. Sometimes you can just walk in, I think, depending on like what season it is, because it is cold in Minnesota.
Just call ahead.
Yeah, just go. And it's a cool town, too. There's a really good place called Kaiserhof where I got amazing chicken sandwiches. Anyway.
We will be back very soon with an episode you do not want to miss on Violeta Parra.
She's amazing.
Yes, and she is not scary.
Well, kind of.
Well,
some scary stuff in there. Yeah. It's good. It's interesting.
It's going to be awesome. And remember, your kid could not have lithographed that. Bye-bye.
Bye.